picking on that red guitar. So gather round, now gather round, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud too, well, because South's gonna do it again and again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Friday morning to you as we approach the weekend. It'll be a good one. Hopefully everyone out there has good weekend plans. I certainly do. I'm just breathing sighs of relief that I still have an employment status here at FM Talk 106.5. That's always a good thing. Real quick, coming up Monday, we'll have Congressman Gary Palmer joining us from FM Talk. From WVNN, we'll have Dale Jackson, morning host there, and State Representative Matt Simpson. So make sure you tune in on Monday. That'll be a great show. May add another guest or two to the roster. Who knows what could happen. Joining us now, our usual Friday guest. She represents you folks in Baldwin County. State Senator Chris Elliott joins us on the line. Senator, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you down here in South Alabama.
Yeah, so I'm glad you feel that way, because I was worried the reception down here, which way that could go. You never know these days.
We're happy to have you.
Senator, let's get right into it. COVID-19, how are things going over there? Last time we talked, things were kind of coming back, but just give us a progress report.
You know, I think things are really going about as well as can be expected. The social distancing is taking place. You know, the big concern, you know, now is as we transition from a summertime, you know, business type of season for our beaches and our tourists back into school, and that's going to be a challenge. That's going to be something that I think we are still unsure of, statewide and here in South Alabama as well. We're going to have to see how it goes. I am concerned myself, you know, two kids myself, both of whom are going to be starting school next week. We've talked about, you know, measures to try to stay safe, but also to try to get back to normal and see if we can make it through this pandemic as unscathed as possible.
I mean, it seems to me, particularly with the schools, it's just kind of let's see how this goes. While the discussion is, well, we got to do this or we got to do that, but probably the best approach is, if we learn anything from the shutdown experience, it's a little bit of trial and error.
It is, and I think that's a fair way to characterize the response nationally from a statewide level and locally as well. You know, we didn't understand this virus going in. It was new. We didn't understand transmission rates, hospitalization rates, mortality rates. And I think it's really poked holes in our government's system from a response standpoint. And also, you know, brought out some pretty serious constitutional issues that will need to be addressed later on down the road.
Yeah, those constitutional issues can... It seems to me, based on all of this, and then there's a lot of your colleagues in the legislature, or whenever you guys finally do reconvene, be it in a special session, all that doesn't look very likely when you reconvene in the in 2021, going to be looking at some kind of overhaul of how all of this works, because we never know when one of these pandemics might come along again.
Well, we don't, and look, there are two different things, you know, conversations to have. One is, did we do the right thing? And I think in some cases yes, and in some cases absolutely not. And then, you know, the other question is that authority and power vested in the right place, and should it be there? Do we need to clarify laws that are 100 years old that deal with emergency powers? You know, and I think the answer to that is absolutely. You know, Senator Whatley, it's his birthday today, by the way, Senator Whatley had a bill last session that did not matriculate, but I expect will in the next session, that really overhauls the powers and authorities, not only of the state health officer, but of the governor under the Emergency Powers Act. And we need to look at that and see if we can figure out a way to get some better consensus from and input from the legislature if we're going to have these prolonged states of emergency.
I mean, it seems like a good approach is kind of like when the president uses military force, and he has a window of time before he has to go seek authorization from the Congress. In these circumstances, whether they're just having these indefinite shutdowns or, you know, they have arbitrary dates assigned to them, but the governor could say, well, we're going to extend this, that there ought to be some sort of legislative oversight or some component like that.
Absolutely, and that's what that proposed legislation, you know, ponders. And I think this is really, for folks that are concerned about the constitutionality of and how these executive orders are working and for how long they may be in effect, it is very concerning, and it has gotten folks' attention, and I think will definitely be something that the legislature looks at when we reconvene.
Do you have any ideas just how much of that is, just how much of a role the legislature should have? Because there would be, there'd be pushback against it that you don't want to tie the hands of the governor or the executive too much, because you want them to have the ability to respond in an emergency situation. Just how much executive power, because traditionally that office, at least compared to other offices, other governor's offices around the country, isn't as strong. Just where is that right balance?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we had that question on the federal level as well. You were talking about that before your break, and it's one that I think in a republic like ours, we need to continue to talk about separation of powers and where the good balance is. But I think that what we've seen in this particular instance with this pandemic is a governor that is essentially saying that her emergency powers are unending and that they can continue indefinitely without any oversight from the legislature or any other body. And that is, I think, a red flag when you look at separation of powers and you look at checks and balances. And if that is the assertion, and it seems to be in the last executive order, then that is justifiably concerned. And again, that's not necessarily discussing the merits of any decisions and that have been made under those executive powers, those emergency powers, but rather the fact that they are like they are and they exist as they are, and that they could be indefinite, that is concerning. But you do point out, we do want the executive to have the ability to respond immediately to emergencies. Of course, down here on the coast, we have weather events. We don't like to say the H word this time of year, and we try not to say it, but we do have weather events that sometimes require swift and immediate action. But those are not events that should last for months and months and months. And that seems to be what's happening here, and is a good reason to probably revisit the enabling and underlying statute that allows for those emergency powers.
Now, Senator, your history with Governor Ivey is well documented. I guess I might know the answer to this part of the question. Are you in conversations? Are they keeping you up to date? But do you get the sense that what the governor's office decision making, are they at least keeping the leadership and the respected chambers of the Alabama legislature kind of updated on their decision making process? Are you hearing anything like that?
You know, I'll let them speak for themselves, but I can tell you that no, I don't necessarily get that feel from you know the leadership. I think that this administration is very much of a go it alone. I think we saw that in the last legislative session with the debate over the CARES Act money, very contentious. And really didn't need to be. But I will say, I think I'm a little bit surprised by that, because there was such a good working relationship with the legislature early on. When we, for instance, were talking about infrastructure funding, that worked fairly well with the leadership. There was a lot of conversation and discussions back and forth, and ended up being successful, at least from the governor's standpoint. But that relationship has certainly soured. I think there were some efforts to try to put it back together. But it's been a marked shift between what happened at the beginning of the quadrennium and where we are now.
Yeah, you're referring to the CARES Act money, and then we had this this bombshell story that the legislature wanted to take money for the long-suffering people from COVID-19 to use on a new state house. It embarrassed the legislature. But what it did, it seemingly I'd be embarrassed the Senate more than it embarrassed the House. But then in that 11th hour, right before y'all gaveled out, the House and the governor come up with a – they broker an agreement, vote on it. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you were the only no vote on that budget. Is that situation getting better, or are we just kind of where we were and we're hoping for the best when you pick up in 2021?
I think it's the latter of the two. I think it is a hope for the best. I know there have been some limited conversations, you know, between the Senate leadership and the governor's office, but I still think there are some very sore feelings over that. Now, we're all bigger than that, and we've got a state to run, and we'll get over it and move on. But those types of power plays for the sake of power, and embarrassing an entire, you know, legislative body on purpose and for a political reason are not going to bode well for a future working relationship. And they really ought to have known that. I mean, at this level of operation for politicos, you know, you got to know you got to still govern it with these folks at the end of the day, and treating them like the administration treated the legislature is just does not bode well. And we'll have to see how that plays out for the rest of this administration.
Well, and I think the one big item on the list, the governor, well, there's really just two, and if you listen to her inauguration speech, it was infrastructure, which that was accomplished almost immediately with the Rebuild Alabama Act, but prisons, the prison question. The governor's going to go at it on her own. It looks like the Contract Review Committee has approved some money to be spent and headed in that direction. Where do you think we are on the prison question? And do you think the way the governor's handling this, particularly with the DOJ kind of looking down at Alabama, at the ADOC, that this is getting in headed to a satisfactory place?
Well, you know, this is another great example of this administration essentially going it alone, right? And they have even justified that. They've essentially admitted that they are, and they have used as justification the fact that Governor Bentley was unable to get the legislature to move forward on some prison construction plans during his administration. And they said, well, the legislature had a chance to fix this, and they didn't. Well, that's a fair characterization of that effort that was made by a previous governor and a previous legislature. But one-third of the legislature that sits in both the House and Senate, including myself, was not there when that effort took place. And this governor wasn't in the chair when that last effort took place. So simply using past failures as a justification not go through the legislative appropriation process on this, I think is a bad idea. And I think that at the end of the day, it's going to be very costly for the people of Alabama, much more so than is necessary, to privatize the construction through some sort of public-private partnership and then leaseback program. It's going to be much more expensive than a simple bond issuance at historically low bond rates for the state to go out and construct and maintain the prisons that we need in order to house our prisoners and stay away from any federal intervention.
Are you surprised there's a bit more pushback from your colleagues on the governor going and at it alone? Because when you talk to a lot of these senators and members of the House, they'll tell you, well, I mean, there are so many obstacles and there's economic reasons that we could never get this done because people don't want prisons taken out of their district because they're such big economic drivers. I mean, you hear we tried this before, but it doesn't seem, at least not to me, that it seems to be like there's a lot of just, okay, we're okay with Governor Ivey doing this on her own, whereas I would think the legislature would want more of a say in a lot of what's going on here just because of the dollars amount involved and, like you said, the potential cost savings if you just bonded it out rather than doing it through this lease agreement. You would save the taxpayer money. But is it just because it's such a political heavy lift that you're not really hearing much pushback?
You know, that might be the case. I didn't run for office to not have to make tough decisions. I mean, I welcome those tough decisions. That's why the people of my district elected me, and that's what I'm here to do. I think shying away from that once you've been elected is really the wrong answer. But I would say to anybody that's not willing to take this on, we have a responsibility to the taxpayers to make sure that we run this government as efficiently as possible. And mark my words, right now, Jeff, we're going to run into a situation where the governor's projections on the costs, annual costs of these leases, are going to fast outpace what they say they're going to be able to fund them with, and that is the savings on maintenance. And this is going to end up costing a whole lot more money, and most of the legislature and this governor will be gone by the time those chickens come home to roost, and it's going to be left to the taxpayers to fund a inefficient and expensive plan.
So you're just to clarify, you're skeptical of the idea that we could just by merely upgrading and updating facilities that there will be cost savings enough that will cover the expenses for this plan.
I think there is no way in the world that passes the smell test, and that anybody believes that that's really going to happen.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. Hey, I appreciate this. I'm glad you're going to be doing this every week. I'm really looking forward to it.
Glad to have you here. Thanks.
All right. That's State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Try to get with him every Friday. Get caught up on what's going on. We got to take a timeout. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. Stage and a beautiful bed.